Ugh, I don't miss those Eagle gloves, dude.
Which ones?
Remember the gloves I had for Santa Clara that were like Eagle? Hold on, let me look at this picture. Damn. Sty. Damn, dude. Fucking Sty, dude. Horrible glove position.
Your glove is low, I was going to say.
I think it's because it's like the guy's going down low or something. I'm hoping. One of the few D2 games I ever played.
How'd it go?
I think we won that game, but that's because the other team was terrible. That's the only time they would ever put me in. When, like, there was no way I could fuck it up. Welcome back to the Garage Hockey Podcast. I'm Felix Sicard, joined by Nick and Joe Berger, as per usual. It's been a little while. We took a week hiatus, I think. Something like that. It was like a week. Maybe it was a bit of the post-Thanksgiving doldrums. Whatever it was, we're back now, and there's a lot going on in the National Hockey League, and actually, there's a little drama, so we're going to get into that. We're going to talk concussions, we're going to talk coach firings, and we might, you know, talk a little Sharks Habs towards the end. You guys ready?
Yeah, and how could we not, by the way? How could we not?
Yeah, that was a sweet game.
Yeah, well, whatever. So, the Florida Panthers let go of Gerard Gallant last week, the coach who took them to 103 points last season. You know, a well-liked guy in hockey circles, a good hockey man, pretty much across the board. That's how people would describe him. They let him go after a disappointing overtime loss to the Carolina Hurricanes. And this pretty much set hockey Twitter on fire, mostly because of the way it happened. The Panthers aren't crushing it this season, but they're just kind of staying afloat. They've had some injuries, Alex Barkov, Nick Bjugstad. So they've been missing key components of the roster, but, you know, they've stayed afloat. And people thought, okay, that should be good enough to keep the coach around, because clearly he can work with less. That wasn't the case, and basically, just to give everyone a little background, they fired him when they had the chance to, but really, this firing was a long time in the making. Over the summer, there was a lot of friction between him and the front office. Basically, he didn't like the direction the team was taking. He didn't like the fact that they traded, you know, a guy like Eric Branson, and then they let go of a guy like Willie Mitchell. Really, because that's the kind of player he likes, you know, tough two-way defenseman, and instead they were moving clearly towards, you know, the more slick skating, puck moving, offensive type defensemen like Jason Demers and Keith Yandle, guys that they brought in this summer, and even last year, before the Panthers went on their crazy run to really have to cap off a great season, basically Panthers management forced Gallant's hand and told him, "Hey, you're going to play these players, or we're firing you." Basically, and that was, I mean, Gallant did it. But then he got the credit for the good season. Mm. So just kind of a weird situation in Florida, a really just a philosophical divide that's basically been the tagline for this whole thing between the front office and Gerard Gallant. So I'm going to throw it to you guys. What were your initial thoughts when the firing happened, and where do the Panthers go from here?
Well,
I should briefly mention before you guys start that they fired Gerard Gallant, clearly, obviously, but they brought in, general manager Tom Rowe stepped down from the front office to be the interim head coach for now. He's going to be the head coach for the rest of the season, but I'm not sure if he'll be there, you know, for the long term. But for now, he's the man behind the bench.
I mean, you want the coach and, at the very least, the GM, if not the whole front office, to be on the same page, because the coach is extremely important, but you know the GM builds the team, and we've seen it in other places like Montreal and Anaheim that players have been brought in, and coaches refuse to play them, or at the very least use them the way that they were intended to be used for the reason why they were brought in. So like if there's a divide between the coach and the front office, like it, even if there's a compromise and you know, they, they agree to, you know, do a little bit of both, or, you know, if one gives in and either the GM designs the team or the coach coaches the players that he needs to coach, then it will work short term, but it's not going to be anything lasting.
Yeah, like it's actually healthy to have differences of opinion and to not agree on everything, because then you see things differently. But when the GM has built a team to like play a certain way and the coach is doing something completely different, that's just too much of a divide.
Like, and that's why you see coaches get fired a lot, because, you know, it's always said, it's, you know, even if the players are responsible for, you know, the messes they've created, it's easier to get rid of one guy than it is to get rid of 20 guys.
Yeah. And the other thing is, Florida is in the middle of the pack in the Atlantic. They're right around 500. And after having 103 points last season, they were expected to do much better. And also, when your goals for per 60 is second worst in the league and your goals against per 60 is worst in the league, then, like, that's kind of,
It's indicative.
Yeah, that's kind of indicative of the way things are going. Like, it's not entirely surprising that he was fired.
And they're in somewhat win-now mode. You know, one of their best offensive players is Jahmyr Yager.
Like, yeah, although he's looked every bit like 45 years of age this season.
Yeah, but you know, that's why it's win-now. And, you know, Luongo is, you know, he's at the end of his career. Like, you know, if this is not the last season, maybe like one more. But, you know, like two of the big faces of the team are in win now mode. The whole team, despite the young talent they have, has to be a win now mode. Well, and you know, with where they are in standings right now, it's not cutting it.
Well, it's not just that they're in win now mode because of the guys, like because of some of the older guys. They're in win now mode because they can be. Like, they just have a really good team. They have a really good roster, and there's no reason for this team to not be, you know, really, I mean, I don't say dominating, but having a really good season. But I think the thing that most people took issue with this firing wasn't so much, like I said earlier, the fact that it happened, although that was clearly a point of contention, but it's the way that it happened. You saw the pictures that came out of Gerard Gallant, you know, getting into a cab out of the arena, and people like Ray Ferraro tweeted, basically bashing the Florida Panthers organization, saying, have some class, give the guy a little dignity. You know, only for it to later come out that they did order him, you know, a company car or whatever, and he just declined it.
Yeah, he just didn't want to wait.
But, you know, never mind that. And basically all of the old boys club, as we like to call them, the talking heads that you see on Sportsnet, TSN, NBC, just these people came out in droves and basically chastised the Florida Panthers for what they deemed to be an unforgivable move, indefensible, because, again, Gerard Gallant is supposedly this good hockey man, and for whatever reason, that just puts you above criticism. Look, here's what I'll say. Gerard Gallant, I think he's a good coach. I think that he did good things with the Carolina.
Absolutely.
Reds, the Florida Panthers. Like, he is a good coach. The problem is, like Joe was saying, the Florida Panthers have a clear-cut direction. Their new owner, Vinny Viola, is a Wall Street guy. He's a billionaire, and he's made his money basically finding ways to be on the cutting edge of the industry and everything he's done. And part of that has been the use of analytics and predictive models. And that's the direction he's wanted this team to take. The Florida Panthers are a team that is effectively all in on analytics.
And they sort of need to be. Like, you know,
yeah, in a smaller market with, I mean, money isn't so much an issue now when you have like a billionaire as an owner. But the fact is, it makes sense. They want to optimize their dollars because they want to find ways to draw fans. Like, there's an incentive here. There's clearly a reward factor here if they're good.
And, you know, where they're at right now, like, even when they were good the past couple seasons, they weren't drawing people into the arena. And,
yeah, you know, they were flawed teams, too, when they were doing well, even last season.
Yeah, they still have a lot of work ahead of them.
They have a lot of work ahead of them. Like, I mean, there was a really good article written. I forget. It might have been Chris Johnston. It was someone at Sportsnet. But, I mean, it was a joke before this season, before Viola took over. Like, they were literally giving away tickets. Like, you could go to like a restaurant or like some local establishment that the Panthers were like sponsored by, and there would just be like, this is a report, that it was in the article. There would literally be tickets just spread out across a table.
Wow.
NHL tickets.
Wow.
Like, they were giving them away.
Like, single A, that's like single A baseball level.
Yeah, and so it was a joke. And Viola has come in and cut back on all of that. And maybe it's hurting them a little bit in the short term. But this guy has a vision. And he wants his team to do it his way. And, I mean, when you buy a team for millions of dollars, you kind of get to do what you want. Oh, you know, like, it's your product. Ultimately, it doesn't matter what other people say.
And, you know, I got to respect a guy that, you know, comes in and takes an active interest in...
He wants to win.
You know, in his properties. You know, like, yeah. you see some owners come in, whether it's any sport, they come in and they buy a team and it's basically just another trophy on their shelf. Like, they don't really care. They just want to say they own a sports franchise.
You know, when you buy, like, the Yankees or something, you can kind of sit back and just, you know, count the checks coming in. But the whole thing that, you know, I should really pull up this article, but, like, what this article talked about is, like, Viola's a guy who's always wanted to take on challenges. And he saw in the Panthers an opportunity and a challenge because, you know, it's a really struggling market, but talent really sprinkled across the roster and, you know, just an opportunity to come in and really set a new direction. And they've done that. They've hired analytics people. They've really decided, like, hey, we're going to take this approach because we think that's the way to win. And it's not like they're, you know, they're all in on that aspect, but it's not like they don't understand that there's value to having been around the game. Like, Dale Talon is still there. They effectively stripped him of most of his power. He's now just kind of like a figurehead. I think he's like president of operations or vice president of operations, something like that. But he's still there. He still has somewhat of a voice, maybe. Tom Rowe, the head coach, who people said was an analytics guy when they hired him as a GM, he's a hockey lifer. Like, he played in the NHL. He's a former player. Like, this is a guy who's been around the game. So he's not some like stat head, or as Steve Simmons duly tweeted in the aftermath of the firing, some computer boy.
Oh, wow. It's so condescending.
Yeah, I mean, it's Steve Simmons. He's crap.
Okay.
But
did he also call them a basket of deplorables?
I don't know if he's trolling everyone at this point, but it's just, like, give it up.
Yeah.
Anyway, so all that to say that they've taken a direction and they didn't think Gallant could be the guy. And they just jumped at an opportunity to do it when it was the time. And I got to say, I support the move. Because if you're not getting the result you want, if you're not getting the output you want, then change the input. Like, this is an approach that I think more franchises should take in being more proactive.
And look, they're not out of it yet. Like, they're very much in the playoff race.
And maybe that's why now was the time.
Now is the time.
Before maybe it fell off the wagon.
Yeah. I mean, they're 4 points back of the third spot. You know, so, like, they're well, like, there's not a reason to panic at the moment. But, you know, if you see that you need to make a change, then better sooner rather than later when it is too late.
Yeah. And they have a lot of the pieces in place. Like, they have Barkov and Trocheck and Aaron Ekblad. Like, this is a good team.
Like, yeah. It honestly, it reminds me a little bit of the Warriors when they fired Mark Jackson.
Yeah.
And they're kinda, like, yeah. You know, like, we have a championship team, but we don't think this coach is going to get us that championship. So they fired him, brought in, you know, someone who could get them and did get them a championship, you know? So, like, I support the decision, and it sounds like, you know, in the front office from, you know, the owner on down, there's a very good attitude in Florida right now. We just have to wait to see if they make the right moves.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that we should all keep in mind is that no matter what the outcome of this season is for the Florida Panthers, and other people have made this point, and I'm echoing it to some degree, but I also really feel this way, is that it shouldn't be seen as some referendum on, like, statistics or analytics. You know, like, I mean, if they don't win, it's not because using statistical evidence to make decisions is wrong. It's just maybe the way they interpreted those stats was wrong. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it shouldn't be seen as, like, oh, this is the hill that analytics are going to die on. Like, I mean,
yeah, they're not going to die on Florida Panther Hill.
I mean, like, it's just a funny point that's being made that I've heard a few times now. It's like, you know, people always say, oh, well, don't talk to me about, like, you can't measure heart with Corsi or whatever. But if you just replace the word Corsi with pucks on net,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden, like, that's a total hockey cliche. We just want more pucks on net than the other team.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, like, I think that the larger point here is that it shouldn't be seen, you know, one way or the other, on like a necessarily a referendum on the use of statistics. I just think it should be seen as a good step forward that a team is willing to try something different and like sort of outside of the box.
Yeah.
And really be upfront about it. Like, they're not making any secrets of like their intentions, which I think is like, you know, very respectable.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, Gerard Gallant, he has shown the past couple of years that he's a good coach. But you know, this team felt they needed to make certain moves and he wasn't part of, oh God, cliche. You know, he's just not part of the process moving forward. Yeah.
Well, he really wasn't, and he was resisting the directives they were giving him. Like, he didn't want these players. Like, the guys that they were giving him in the offseason, he wanted gritty guys. They pretty much gave him the opposite.
Yeah,
that's what
Keith Yandle is not a gritty player.
That's what gets me. Why in this day and age would you rather have Eric Goodbranson and Willie Mitchell over Jason Demers and Keith Yandle?
Yeah. We all saw what the Penguins did last year. And what they're doing this year.
Yeah.
This is the way the league is moving. It's the way it has been moving since the, you know, the first lockout.
Yeah.
You know, so
speed and skill.
Like, you know, this is hockey.
Yeah.
Like, get on board.
Good hockey players are useful. Like, who would have thought?
Yeah. Like, what? Crazy, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe the one criticism to be made is the timing. Like, if they were so sure that he wasn't the guy, why didn't they fire him in the offseason? You know, like,
it's hard to fire a guy that just got you 103 points.
Yeah.
I think that's the big thing.
They needed an out, yeah. Maybe.
And, you know, the Florida Panthers, you know, they worked last year. You know, everything they did, like, they, like you said, I mean, it's sort of redundant, but, you know, they got 103 points. They were doing something right. And, you know,
especially with the fragile fan base, could you imagine trying to sell, oh, hey, our coach and our team just had a great season together, and now we're going to make a huge move like this. And like, it's hard to sell that to a fan base that's already like not on steady ground.
I don't know what the relationship was like, or what Gallant felt like, the kind of players he wanted before this off season. But, you know, if, you know, this off season may have just been the line in the sand. It's like, okay, you know, like, there have been a little rough patches, but it's fine. But, you know, I don't want these players now. I prefer to have these players. And then it's like, okay, we're going to keep you on because you got 103 points last year, but, you know, like, the success has to keep coming, and the team is going to be who we give you. And, yeah, you know, if the success doesn't come, then there's going to be a change.
Well, I mean, I think that it kind of brings into question the role of a coach. Like, do you want your coach to be making personnel decisions? Like, how much input should a coach really have? I mean, I think if it was up to me, I would want a coach who I think could best optimize my decisions. So if I'm taking the direction of, let's say, like, I want a speed and skill team, I'm not going to hire some old school guy. I'm going to hire like a Mike Sullivan or something. Like, I want someone, like, I don't really want them necessarily making the decisions for me. I might take some input from them, but I want them to be able to accentuate what I'm doing. Because I don't think coaches are really capable of separating what they see on the ice with like the bigger picture. They shouldn't, because that's not the way they're wired.
If you look at a coaching change, like, this is probably the coaching change in the past, you know, 10 years that has like the immediate success, and like the right move is when the Kings brought in Daryl Sutter.
Yeah,
you know, Daryl Sutter, who also was a coach GM in Calgary.
Yeah, and right. How well did that work out?
Yeah. But, you know, Dean Lombardi brought him in, who had Sutter in San Jose. And so, you know, he knew what he was getting with Sutter, and he knew the kind of team he had, and he knew that Sutter could work with these players. You know, and, you know, slowly, you know, obviously the Kings have lost some players, and, you know, they're getting older. You know, so it,
and they're still really good.
Yeah, you know, so that's just, you know, the window is, you know, closing on them. But, you know, in that moment, like, for that season, that's what worked. And it seems like much better for a GM to have, you know, a vision and hire a coach that is capable of facilitating that vision, as opposed to, you know, just hiring the best,
the biggest name.
Yeah.
And the coach GM relationship or dynamic, I feel like, needs to be in place when they make the hire, Like, they can't bring in a guy and then just hope that they're going to be on the same page. They need to, before they make the hire, they need to say, okay, if you're our guy and we want you, I'm calling all the shots as the GM. Mm-hmm. I'm putting everything in place and you're doing it my way. Or the coach needs to say, I want full control of what we're doing here. And if it's not going to be that way, then I'm not taking the job. Because otherwise, you're just going to have this internal power struggle.
Yeah.
And it's not going to end well.
I just don't think any coach in the NHL is totally fit to make personnel decisions outside of the night in and night out basis. And even then, like, you look at Mike Babcock, and he's playing Roman Polak and Matt Hunwick together on the Leafs. Yeah. And was playing them in big minutes. Like, no coach seems to be immune from playing or from making these kind of weird decisions. And I mean, you get it. Like, if you kind of step out of that big picture mindset and look more like, all right, what's the coach thinking? And like, the coaches probably like to see guys who will block a shot and who will make a hit and who will, you know, dish out some punishment, you know, stick up for their teammates. Like, those are things that when you're there and you feel it, it probably feels good and it feels like it's contributing to the win. But when you're the general manager or, you know, assistant general manager or whatever, and you're sitting up there, you see the bigger picture that the coach there, that the coach can't see. And that's why you need it to work in tandem.
In literally and, you know, figuratively, it's a different view from the bench that it is from a press box.
Yeah, because
like, you get a different view of the game.
I think that when you're on the bench, you're not really like immune to the emotions. You know, and I think it's been proven time and time again in history that emotions can really cloud judgment. Yeah. Like, it's just a fact. And so I think that, you know, as a GM, of course you're going to have emotions as well. But I think, and not all GMs are like this, but there's maybe more of an ability or more of an opportunity to separate those two and to kind of just be that cold, calculating figure that every organization needs.
Yeah. And there are so many factors too, like how much money a player is making, dictating ice time and stuff like that.
I mean, look at Kevin Bieksa.
Yeah.
You know,
you can't justify sitting him.
He has a no movement clause. He makes $4 million a year. He's a veteran guy. Like, there's no way in hell that the Ducks would ever sit him. Although there is literally no empirical evidence that suggests he
helps the team.
That he helps, like, straight up, that he helps the team.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I should clarify my statement. There's no way you can justify sitting him based on his contract. There's every reason to justify sitting him based on the way he's actually performed.
And, you know, maybe when you're, again, like, you're on the bench and you see him talking to the younger guys or in the locker room, you know, he's a popular figure. Like, you kind of, again, like, you kind of lose sight of sort of just the objective nature of the game. And it seems like in hockey sometimes it really is a popularity contest. Like, Gerard Gallant was a popular guy, and that's why the move was so criticized. If he's not popular, if he's done stuff to, I don't know, piss off the media in the past, like, I don't think anyone really stands up for him.
Yeah.
And it's the same way with coaches and these players. It's like, they just like these guys, and so they're going to play them. And really, there's no reason to. And it's not always as extreme as it is with Bieksa, and I think that that's why the Gallant move was, it's not just that it was unpopular, but I think that's why the Gallant move was so criticized, is that there wasn't like this overwhelming reason. It, like, it's not like the Panthers were losing like 10 straight.
Right.
They weren't getting the optimal results that they wanted. That's why they cut him. Because they knew, A, they weren't getting the results, and B, they didn't think he could ever optimize their roster to get those results. So it's a very hard sell.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're essentially saying, well, this guy's pretty good, or he's okay, but he's not good enough. That's much harder than saying, oh yeah, this guy's clearly run us into the ground, time to get a new guy.
Yeah.
But that's why I give them credit, because they didn't wait for it to bottom out. They're like, hey, we believe in our roster, we believe in the direction we're taking, we're not going to let this go to waste. And you see this around the league time and time again. Franchises screwing around with coaches, and, you know, I mean, like, look at the Canadiens with Michel Therrien. Like, it's just you're wasting the primes of your players. You don't have these guys forever, and you need to make the most use of them.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. You have Barkov and Ekblad and all these guys,
and they're not going to be there forever.
They won't be there forever because, you know, either they'll move on or they'll, you know, get hurt, whatever, get paid somewhere else. I don't know, but they won't be there forever. So you need to optimize them while you can, and if you have a coach whose philosophy isn't going to get the best out of the players that he's been given by the GM, then you should make a move.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Canadians, just, you know, as an example, and like Carey Price is 30.
Yeah.
You know, like that happened fast. You can easily throw away a player's prime by just not really making the right moves. And eventually, once those players leave, you got to start all over again. It's really hard to find guys like that. And in Ekblad and Barkov and even some of the, you know, supporting guys, like, they have that. They have franchise players. And it's so hard to get those guys if you don't draft them.
And with the way the salaries are being, like contracts are being constructed.
Well, yeah, with the rookie deals.
I don't think they're
on the rookie deal. Barkov isn't. I mean, Ekblad isn't.
But looking at more of the long-term deals. Like, you look at anyone who you build a team around is getting a massive long-term deal. And it works. Like, when you're optimizing and you have success, it works in a place like Chicago where, you know, you have all these guys with massive contracts, and yeah, they're going to lose out to players and continue to lose out on players during free agency. But, you know, you have a GM that can go out and draft the right players or scout the right players and just, you know, fill in the slots around them. And then you have other teams that aren't optimizing, and they give the star players are still getting these same massive contracts. And if you're not optimizing and putting the right pieces around them, you're just paying them a lot of money to not win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you're just watching them get older. Be good, but get older. And then eventually you're stuck with them when they're not going to be as effective, if, you know, even help you at all at the end of their contract.
Yeah, and the money thing, too, is that they're going to have to... You know, these guys are going to be due for contracts again at some point, and you're going to
re-sign them.
Yeah, and
that's what happened with the Blackhawks.
It's the same thing with Chicago. You're not going to have enough room for everyone.
Yeah, you know? And eventually you end up paying for it. Like the Hawks this season, I know they have a good record, but they're kind of smoke and mirrors. Like, it's again the Corey Crawford show. You know, a good power play, or, you know, it's just one of those things where at some point it kind of gives out on you. And like with the Hawks, it's kind of a different story to me, because like yes, they've bottomed out, or at least they've fizzled off, tailed off, whatever. Like,
they're no longer clear cut.
They're no longer contenders, but at the same time, like, it's a price worth paying to get 3 Stanley Cups in like 6 years. You know, like, you take that trade.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Every time. You tell me I have a chance within my means to get 3 Stanley Cups, I'm paying that price in full.
The problem is now you have to pay the guys that got you there.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
Like, there's a price to pay for success.
Exactly. And that's fine. Like, I would rather...
It's like, get the success. And then, you know, and that's the thing is, like, you win 3 Stanley Cups, you kind of buy yourself, like, decades of good favor. And then, you know, like, they're still going to sell tickets. They're going to make the playoffs. They're going to be interesting. So it's okay.
And it's way better to win the Stanley Cup 3 times in 6 years than to just contend every year and not win it.
Yeah.
So
exactly. I just think, like, the Chicago thing is one way to look at it, but it's kind of a case apart as of this season, because it's like there's no team in professional sports that doesn't pay its biggest stars who got them those championships. You know, it's just, that's just not how it works.
Yeah.
So.
I would like to bring up one last thing with Gerard Gallant. First coach fired, first on the docket for Las Vegas.
Yeah, we shall see. But that's if someone else doesn't get him.
Yeah, you know, but like first. Every coach fired, it's just another availability. So
yeah, I just, to me, he's a decent coach, but he's not. I think there's only a handful of coaches that really make a big difference.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, there's, like, I can count them on one hand. You know, it's like Hitchcock, Ruff, Babcock. I guess maybe Mike Sullivan. It's kind of early to say. But everyone else, it's more like on the margins. Like, you're going to get marginally better. So, like for the Sharks, for example, like, they were a very good team with Todd McClellan. And then management started screwing around, signing guys like John Scott, and the roster got worse.
Adam Burrish.
And, you know, McClellan took the fall. But, like, DeBoer's come in, and he's done a good job, but he's not, like, he's not like reinventing the wheel or anything.
No.
You know, he's just bringing a sound system to an already very good roster.
And again, it's the same thing where Doug Wilson put together a better hockey team.
Yeah.
And Pete DeBoer is a guy that believes in puck possession, and why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But like, it's just an example of the coach coming in and like his philosophy coalesces with the style of players that the GM gave him.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's really like, the Sharks are one of the best teams just like along the goal line, and that's something he totally preaches. But yeah, and there should be more credit given to that, because it's like, I think the way you see these coaches sometimes, like, you got to give a guy credit when he comes in and just doesn't screw it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that is fair. Coming into an entirely new situation and not taking a step back. Like, yeah. You're flying by the seat of your pants.
Yeah.
Not panicking is big.
Yeah. Well, you just see so many coaches mess up a good situation. So, anyway, I think that does it for the Florida Panthers. It'll be very interesting to see where it all... I mean, now it's kind of like they've set this impossible bar, basically.
They're going to be fascinating to watch the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be one of those things where if they don't make the Eastern Conference Final, everyone's going to be like, oh, well, that's what they get.
Yeah.
And, like, whatever.
They lost in overtime to the Boston Bruins tonight, 4-3, a team that's ahead of them.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, another team that lost in overtime last week, the Edmonton Oilers. Actually, it might have been over the weekend. Lost to the Minnesota Wild in overtime. The Minnesota Wild, by the way, who are like riding high once again with Devin Dubnyk.
posting like a 7,000. His numbers are through the roof.
Yeah, it's the Devin Dubnyk of old is back.
What's he rocking, like a 942 save percentage?
Yeah.
Yeah, 942 and then 163 save percentage.
Or goals against.
Yeah.
Goals against.
Oh, yeah. So he's playing out of his mind. They're kind of riding a bit of a you know, hot streak, you know, shooting percentage and goalie play, but like they're a better team, I think, than they were last year.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bruce Boudreaux, shout out. Yeah,
I mean, it's like, wow, having a better coach kind of makes you a better team. Who would have thought? Oh yeah, Boudreaux is another one of those guys that's in my handful of players or of coaches that makes a team instantly better. But the Edmonton Oilers lost that game against the Wild, but the big story was Connor McDavid. You know, perhaps the most exciting young star in the National Hockey League right now. I mean, the most exciting young star, maybe even the best player. Although that's still a little bit up for debate as long as Sidney Crosby keeps doing what he's doing.
17 goals, and he missed the first...
Wait, what? He has 17?
Yeah, Sidney Crosby has 17 goals. And he missed the first, what, four or six games?
Yeah, he's Tom Brady, essentially.
He's Tom Brady, straight up.
Man, he's amazing. Yeah, he's not ready to give up that throne. But anyway, Connor McDavid, end of the second period, I think with like 6 minutes left, gets tripped behind the net and falls to the ice, and his chin just smacks the ice, and you see his head smack it and then sort of recoil.
Yeah, his head bounced.
And it was a tough sight. And now with the NHL's new concussion protocol, they have independent concussion spotters.
Yeah, and the thing is, he got up and he seemed fine. He was holding his teeth as one would, but like he seemed fine.
He smacked his head on the ice.
But rightfully so. The spotters were, they took him out of the game for, you know, it's like he has to go to the quiet room for 10 minutes. Like this has to happen.
Yeah.
And that was the right move.
Yeah. Well, cause they're specifically trained to recognize the visual cues of a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
Like they don't have any skin in the game. They're just a neutral party. They're there to make sure nobody gets hurt. I mean, like, the skin they have in the game is to make sure the NHL doesn't get any more concussion lawsuits.
Yeah.
Yes.
Basically. But that's a net good.
Yeah.
Less people get concussed.
Yeah. And it's not like these are fans in the seats. You know, these are like people that are qualified to be making these decisions.
So McDavid smacks his face on the ice, and he gets taken to the quiet room because he might have a concussion. Pretty logical move. Well, that's not the way McDavid saw it. He said after the game, "I was pretty shocked, to be honest. I hit my mouth in the ice. You reach up and grab your mouth and you get hit in the mouth. It's a pretty normal thing. Obviously, the spotter thought he knew how I was feeling and he pulled me off. Shitty time in the game too, I guess. It's a little bit of a partial 5-on-3 and a power play late in the second period where if you capitalize, you could change the game. It kind of sucks because that's the rule. You go down, you hit your head, you reach up, and that's the rule. They take you off the ice. I hit my head while I hit my mouth, reached up and grabbed my mouth, and they took that as something that it wasn't. I guess that's the rule. The guy stuck to the script and did his job. So clearly, he's not very happy with what happened. And, you know, I think that as an athlete, as a competitor, as someone who's in the moment, whose entire life has been predicated on winning hockey games, I would understand why he wouldn't be happy, especially if he himself doesn't feel concussed. But at the same time, like, they did the right thing.
I totally understand the way he feels, because they lost in overtime, and you said they were on a 5-on-3?
Well, yeah. The whole thing is that, like, they didn't take him out for the whole game. They just took him out for the remainder of that period.
You know, but
it could have made a difference.
They still took him out, you know,
at a critical juncture.
Yeah, you know, and it's Connor McDavid. Like, at every level, he's
very good.
He's been the guy, and he not only feels, he knows that when he's on the ice, he makes a world of difference, and his team has a significantly better chance to score.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, taking him out in a key situation in when you lose in overtime in the conference, you know, it's you're going to be bitter about it.
Yeah. And I totally get it why, you know, they would be bitter. And so I'll just read you some more quotes, because obviously the teammates had reactions. And one comment that really got, that just kind of lit up Twitter on fire. Patrick Maroon asked about McDavid's, you know, situation, said, "This is a man's game. People are going to get hit, get high-sticked. They're going to go through the middle and get hit. That's part of hockey, and that's why we all have this gear that protects us." Like, yeah, can't you see my gear, bro? But anyway.
Do you even gear?
He didn't actually say that part. But yes, if someone gets seriously hurt, we're concerned. But he just fell, got tripped. I just don't get it. It's a man's game. Okay, so, like, he didn't just fall. He smacked his face on a frozen piece of water.
Yeah, like, on a surface harder than cement.
Yeah, they're not falling on snow.
Yeah.
Like, this is serious business.
So, you know, a lot of people obviously took issue with that comment, and rightfully so. He just comes off as condescending and pompous and all those things that most hockey players tend to be.
Yeah, especially when, you know, they get aggravated.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, the lovable Milan Lucic,
the protector,
added his own two cents. Please. He said, "It's all for liability reasons, right?" I'm doing my best Milan Lucic here. "It's all for liability reasons, right? At the end of the day, isn't it? That's the reason why the NFL has cracked down on it, and that's the reason why the NHL has cracked down on it. It's there to protect the player. Our best player isn't out there because of power play opportunity, because he got hit in the mouth." Like, first off, that didn't make any sense. Like, this is word for word. But yeah, so clearly...
Yeah, Milan Lucic should know what it feels like to be hit in the head.
I mean, what doesn't make sense to me is I totally get why Connor would be, like, upset. Because, like, he's, like, 19. He thinks he's invincible. Like, he's just... He wants to win a game. Like, yeah. His entire life has been built on hockey. So, for him, it doesn't make sense why a situation would be taken out of his control in the moment, right? I'm sure when he's, like, 40 and looks back, he'd be like, yeah, like, that was probably for my own good. But what I don't get is the teammates. Because it's like, you guys, like, don't you want your best player, like, don't you want them to take every precaution with your best player? Like, I mean, I know that some hockey players might not be, you know, paid to do math or anything. Like, they might not be super bright. But they can at least see, like, hey, you know, we want our best player to be taken care of if he's hurt. So to me, it's kind of weird that they would be so, like, upset about it.
Yeah, and we were talking before we went on air. Sometimes concussion symptoms don't show up right away. Sometimes it takes a day or two.
Like,
yeah, it's like they didn't see the play or something.
I remember one instance, like, 2 years ago. I remember this because he was on my fantasy team. Dubinsky. I can't remember. I think he got boarded. And I think he left for the quiet room. He was out for 10 minutes and came back and played fine. And a couple days later, he stepped on the ice for practice and just skating around for a couple of minutes, he had to leave because that's when the concussion symptoms presented themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
Like, there's a reason why they're so... why these protocols are implemented. It's because they are so... unpredictable, and it's not hyperbole.
Yeah,
like each case of head contact is different, every single time, even if it's...
Because everyone has a different physiology. Like, it's just... And so that's the thing is, that's what really baffles me about this whole thing, isn't so much, like, I get, look, you know, like, we were all at that point, you know, younger, a little more brash, and, like, you're playing hockey, and you just think, like, I should never come out of the game. It's just, like, it's how you think when you're a hockey player. But these guys are professionals, you know, like, they have, like, this is how they make their living, and this is how they're going to, you know, provide for their families for the rest of their lives. And with all the information that's out there about concussions, like, literally, we are now, I guess, in the golden age of concussion information.
We know the most we've ever known.
Like, yes. And so, and there's still a lot that's unclear, by the way. And so it's like, for these guys to come out and just belittle what happened, to me, is just kind of like, are you not paying attention? Like, are you, like, how deep in the sand is your head right now?
Yeah.
You know?
And I understand McDavid and the Oilers, why they feel like they got screwed over. But look, this happened with Henrik Lundqvist and Connor McDavid this season, where they had to get taken out of the game. Do you think the NHL wants Connor McDavid and Henrik Lundqvist out of hockey games?
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, because that's the argument that they've been making, is that they, being the Oilers, is that, well, other guys get their bell rung and they don't get taken out. Like, the game before against Anaheim, and I actually watched this game, so I guess I have a bit of a two cents here. Ryan Kessler got rocked, and he looked dazed. Like, he got up, and he was just kind of like, he kind of played it off, just kind of making it seem like, oh, I'm just, like, kind of calm. But he looked a little out of it, and they didn't take him out. And so the Oilers' gripe is like, well, where's the line? You know, like, are you just going to take a guy out every time? And then Mark Spector of Sportsnet, who actually wrote up the article here that I'm reading from, he said, you know, if we're going to make a living here judging concussions or taking guys out if we think they're concussed, shouldn't we take the guys who fight out every single time? Because if you punch a guy in the head repeatedly, you're probably going to get concussed. So
it's a good point.
There is a bit of a gray area. There is a real gray area, but I think if you remove that, like that's my whole thing, is even if there's a gray area, okay, even if hypothetically there's no way of really knowing when or why they choose to take a player out, in that scenario, when you see a guy hit his head on the ice, it's black and white. He comes off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you can complain about that to the league privately, but there's no reason to, like, belittle, diminish, muddy the whole situation with that kind of complaining.
And this is still a relatively new system. Like, it is
very new. It's new to this season.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, well, you know, the quiet room, that's sort of what I'm talking about. The quiet room has been around for a few seasons now.
Yeah.
But, you know, with new protocol, you know, like, as the process, you know, keeps progressing, they're going to be new protocols, and it's, the whole thing is going to be refined. And yeah, it sucks.
It's not perfect.
Yeah, yeah. It's not perfect, and it sucks. Not the process, but it sucks that it's not perfect. But, you know, hopefully by the end of the season, most likely not, but, like, a couple seasons from now, it'll be fairly consistent, we're hoping.
Yeah. And again, but it's just so tough, because, like, yeah, they have a good point. Why wasn't that guy taken out? And why? And I think for us, people who are watching on TV, people who write about this stuff, people who do podcasts about this stuff, it's easy to be like, yeah, they're so stupid. Why don't they just accept this? But, you know, when money's on the line, when millions are on the line, when this is your job to win, like, think about the pressure, especially in a city like Edmonton, to win every single game. Of course, like we were saying earlier, emotion is going to cloud your judgment. But again, I still don't think any of that should matter when you weigh it against the enormous, you know, gravity that surrounds head trauma and its long-term effects. Like, people die because of sustained head, you know, trauma that they get in a course of a professional, you know, contact sport career. Like, you get early onset dementia. Like, that's real.
Yeah.
And it's like, the fact that these guys can't even begin to understand that, and these guys, like, the few quotes I've read here, it's kind of weird. You know, if this was, like, even 5 years ago and they were reacting this way, I'd be like, ah, like, that's just how it is. But now, with everything that's come out, it's like really?
There are football players retiring in their prime.
Yeah.
Because
Patrick Willis.
Yeah, like because like it's not worth the risk. All the money and all the glory that they're potentially making is not worth the rest of their life, and they see that.
Yeah. And it's like for these guys to not be able to differentiate, to weigh that, aka their livelihoods when they're 40, 50, 60, 70, as opposed to winning on a whatever like Thursday night against the Minnesota Wild in December. It's like, come on.
Yeah, like,
you know,
you want Connor McDavid to have 20 good years in the NHL, but you also want him to have another good 50 after.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
That's a really good point. Yeah. So
I mean, with because there are so many variables and so many uncertain variables because of the nature of concussions, like you got to do two things. One, you can keep going with the system that's in place and hope to refine it and, you know, maybe perfect it unrealistically, but, you know, at the very least, get it to be consistent and competent. Or you can make it so that...
Or take out checking.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like...
But, like, you can make it so that every player who gets hit in the head, even a little bit, with a hit, a stick, a puck, the ice, doesn't matter, water bottle, doesn't matter. Every head contact, a player comes out. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to give it a little time and give the spotters a little time they need to see.
They have your best interest
in
mind. Okay, so one other thing about Patrick Maroon here. So after the comments came out and, you know, the Twitter firestorm got underway, he tweeted out a little like notepad screenshot from his iPhone and then actually deleted it. So here's what he said. I'm going to read this word for word.
Was it about Hamilton?
So bear with me with the questionable grammar. I just want to clear about a few things on my recent interview. First of all, I'm not a sexist by any accounts. I respect women and have the utmost respect to women hockey players. I was referring to the NHL when I stated it was a man's game, not hockey. The NHL. Okay. I mean, that's like a weird way to clarify that. Mm-hmm. You could just say, I said it was a man's game because of this and that, and I think it's just an intense game. You don't have to be like, well, I'm specifically talking about a men's league. Mm. Anyway, so, and then he says, second, for all the people who are calling me, and then, you know, in parentheses, I will keep it PG.
Thank
you. Who says PG and, like, not PC? Anyway, for all the people who are calling me not smart, last time I checked, I play hockey, not school. No degree needed here. You should try it. ... Third, the media, quit taking this out of context. We're the reason you have this great job. Don't put words in my mouth. You knew damn well what I was referring to. And I think one of the best tweets, I saw about this, it was from Dmitry Filipovich of Sportsnet. He had the best response to that last bit about the media, if I can just find it here. Oh, yeah, he said, I'd like to belatedly thank Patrick Maroon for handing me this glorious job at Rogers Sportsnet.
Yes.
It's like, I'm glad he deleted that tweet because it was a bad idea, but the internet never forgets.
Never.
He just sounded like a dumbass in that little...
He pointed out that he was a dumbass.
I play hockey, not school, or like whatever he said.
Over under 2.5 Labatt Blues before he wrote that.
God, I don't want to know what that dude's taking. Anyway.
Oh, shout out one
time. So, yeah, Patrick Maroon, you know, digging the grave there.
That was fun.
Hockey culture still sucks. Breaking news in the Garage Hockey Podcast.
Yeah, and... The thing that I think is frustrating the players is the fact that there's not, like, a Brendan Shanahan video that's out saying, like, the head was the principal point of contact. Like,
yeah, that might actually be a good idea.
Yeah. Like, it's like, why did we take this guy out then?
Yeah, like, yeah, I think they just want consistency and they want to be kept in the loop.
I think it will get to that point because...
I think it has
Shanahan had the same blowback in the beginning And then they made the Department of Player Safety this like juggernaut with like, they have like, I mean, dozens of people working there from all walks of hockey, you know, like referees, former players, you know, like managers. I mean, it's really like a fleshed out operation now. So maybe this will get to that point. I still think that as imperfect as it may be, it's still a step in the right direction.
100%.
We brought it up before the podcast, and it's something that I've brought up in a previous podcast, you know, that you're going to see, well, I was wondering if you're going to see in like playoff games, players targeting heads, like, you know, people that, you know, those guys who are, you know, like you always see fights and it's like, oh yeah, I just got the fourth liner is off for 4-5 minutes because, you know, he fought and then he fought someone like one of the skilled players, which you don't see as much anymore, obviously. But, you know, if one of those guys that are going to be only playing 5 minutes in the in a playoff game, if that, you know, just decides to go after in a key moment one of the top players on the other team and, you know, not necessarily hit him in a way that's going to get them suspended or fined or anything, but just know that they have to hit him just enough for them to get him off the ice for 10 minutes that they have to be taken off.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Like, will they take advantage
of it? Yeah, like, you know, if that had been the conference final matchup, you know, the Wild versus the Oilers, and, you know, they get McDavid off for 10 minutes, and then, you know, 2-1 in overtime, you know, it's a much bigger issue. And obviously, you know, we'll find out in this playoffs and, you know, the next couple of playoffs down the road, if it's something that you're going to see. It'd be awful if you do see it from, you know, morally and tactically. But
I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't either.
Because penalties are involved.
Yeah.
If you check a guy in the head, like, you're out of the game. Yeah. So.
But that's the thing. They don't necessarily have to check him in the head. They just have to, you know, even make it look like, you know, like those massive hits to the chest where you got a guy that has a few inches on someone and, you know, the announcer's always like, you know, oh, you know, you see the head move back, but it's not necessarily the point of contact. But, you know, if the independent spotter deems it as significant and, you know, meets the criteria for, you know, taking them off the ice for 10 minutes. You know, it could be a clean hit.
And then you know what'll happen there? They're going to be like, oh, we need to get rid of these individual spotters. Yeah. Not the guys that are targeting these players.
So I agree with you. I don't think it's going to be an issue, but it'll be interesting to see if anyone attempts that.
It's tough to say.
Time will tell.
Anyway, I think, man, that was a lot.
We got 53 minutes out of two topics.
Yeah. Nice.
We went to the Sharks and Habs game.
Yeah, so I guess, to wrap it up here, on Friday, we graciously received some sweet tickets.
Hence my pun at the beginning.
Yeah, some sweet, actually sweet. We were in one of those private suites at the arena, SAP Center. I'm done talking about this game.
Oh man, but like, wasn't it such a great game, though?
No, it wasn't. The Canadians lost.
They managed one goal towards the end.
They're just a...
That was a hell of a goaltending duel, though.
Yeah, Carey Price let in a couple in the beginning and then shut it down the rest of the way, and Jones had a really good game, too, so that was entertaining, but they weren't...
Did they play the way you expected?
They just played bad. I thought that the way they played, they deserved to at least get a couple goals and maybe take it to overtime, but... Like, they were trailing the whole game, and they didn't totally dominate. That's what really bothered me. It's like...
It didn't totally dominate on the Sharks team that shut down after one period.
Yeah, like, the Sharks stopped playing, and the Canadians did have the puck most of the remaining 40 minutes, but it didn't really feel like they were, just going full throttle. They were... I don't know.
It was a very disorganized hockey game.
Yeah. I mean, at least the Canadians beat the Kings a couple nights later in a shootout. That was actually a really good game.
Finally getting another win in California. That's like two in the past decade.
Yeah. So anyway, that was pretty depressing. But the seats were awesome. Good company. Free beer. Can't really complain about that.
Yep. Friends of the show and real life friends coming through.
Yeah. Yeah. So season will continue to roll on. We might even get another podcast this week. Who knows?
Hopefully.
We'll see if time will allow for that. I think it will. I feel pretty confident because we only talked about two things today.
Yeah.
But yeah, Nick, we're actually recording. We're done recording. It's like, well, done. It's like 9:15. This is like the earliest maybe we've ever like gotten done for an episode.
Ever. Since the summer.
Yeah. So Nick will actually have time to edit and also like not be a walking zombie at work tomorrow.
Yeah. I won't be hating life.
Yeah. So, yeah, good pod, guys.
Good pod. Guys, thank you for listening to another episode of the Garage Hockey Podcast. If you want to hear more, we are on iTunes and Stitcher. You can listen to us there. If you want to tweet your questions or comments at us, hit us up on Twitter at Garage Hockey Pod. We also appreciate a nice 5-star rating and review on iTunes because it will help people notice the show. Guys, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you soon.